we want to fully understand to prevent this from happening with the new developments that will be nearby our community.
State regulators hear from the Nuiqsut mayor about last year's gas leak at the Alpine oil field near the village. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, March 23rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Anchorage Assembly members consider a clean slate approach to finding a new space for a homeless shelter.
Why did I change my mind? Reality slapped me in the face pretty hard. It was a bit of a come to Jesus moment, really.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's three universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
While ConocoPhillips faces national scrutiny over a future Arctic oil drilling site known as Willow, state regulators today took testimony about an uncontrolled natural gas leak last year at Alpine, a developed oil field about 30 miles away. The company rerouted the gas through a waste disposal well within days, but it took more than 3 weeks to stop the leak at the source. ConocoPhillips employees repeatedly told the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commissioners that no people or wildlife were harmed and that the gas was not emitted beyond the gravel drilling pad known as CD1. But residents in nearby Nuiqsut evacuated, and Nuiqsut Mayor Rosemary Atunguruk said people there remain concerned about the health impacts of emissions, particularly on pregnant women, infants, and elders.
This event gave our community members much concern. We want to fully understand to prevent this from happening with the new developments that will be nearby our community.
The mayor asked for an alarm system to warn of future emissions. ConocoPhillips Chief Alaska Well Engineer Erica Livingston said the company is tracking pressure more closely, but has not required alarms that would signal an event of this type.
That is something that can be used. We have not mandated that within the SOP, but again, we're able to track that pressure and watch it much more closely than we had in the past.
Some sections of the well were enforced with concrete to prevent events like this, but the source of the leak was determined to be from an area 3,000 feet down from a formation not previously known to contain such much gas. Commissioner Jesse Shimolowski asked why the company didn't use more concrete. Livingston says ConocoPhillips relies on its well design, and if required, the company would use more concrete. The commission is considering the case for possible enforcement action, which could include fines. Commission Chair Brett Huber said the panel will issue a written decision, but did not say when. Anchorage's elected officials don't want to use the Sullivan Arena as a low-barrier homeless shelter beyond April. For years, they've generally agreed that using multiple, smaller shelters works better. But going from that general consensus to considering a specific shelter location goes sideways fast. The latest example played out during this week's Anchorage Assembly meeting. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports.
In February, the Anchorage Coalition to End Homelessness suggested the Arctic Recreation Center on Arctic Boulevard would be a good fit to convert into a new, permanent, low-barrier shelter. It's for sale for $12.5 million. Assemblymember Felix Rivera chairs the committee where it came up, and he was excited about the potential for 150 more beds, space for navigation services, and other possibilities. His excitement was short-lived.
Why did I change my mind? Reality slapped me in the face pretty hard. It was a bit of a come-to-Jesus moment, really.
The rec center is in his assembly district, and he says he got a lot of pushback from his constituents. He asked his assembly colleagues to drop that concept, as well as the shelter idea that Mayor Dave Bronson pushed for during his campaign in 2021, near the intersection of Tudor and Elmore Roads, which is also in Rivera's district. For the city's most vulnerable people, the assembly and mayor have repeatedly failed to establish new, low-barrier shelter space and have repeatedly fallen back on using the Sullivan Arena.
And I wouldn't blame anyone for thinking, not in my neighborhood. But here's the thing. We need to move beyond these two examples, beyond these gut reactions, to what shelter can and should be in our community.
Rivera says elected officials need a fresh round of engagement with the public about the municipality's overall sheltering policies and philosophy before making decisions about specific sites. And he claims that can happen with enough time to stand up a new permanent low-barrier shelter by November. Rivera's attempt to take the two locations off the table was part of a resolution he proposed for a public engagement campaign he dubbed a Clean Slate Strategy. The Assembly voted 7-4 to support the public engagement campaign, but would not drop the two shelter location ideas. Here's Assemblymember Daniel Voland.
I don't think a clean slate conversation preemptively removes options from the table.
Public safety in Voland's district has suffered from spillover effects of hosting the mass shelter at the Sullivan Arena since 2020. The resolution says the Assembly won't make any decisions about specific shelters until after a process for the public and neighborhoods to weigh in is laid out. Rivera, who's up for re-election, plans to host a lot of committee meetings and town hall meetings this spring and summer about permanent year-round low-barrier shelters. Assemblymember Austin Quinn Davidson was pessimistic that Rivera's plan would change things.
I don't know that it gets us anywhere. There's a lot of discussion about, oh, it's a clean slate, or this is going to be a whole new thing. We've been doing the same thing for years. It's the same thing. And then we get feedback we don't like, and then we try to do a new thing. And it's the same thing.
Mayor Dave Bronson had a role in the latest round of pushback. Last week, he announced he would host a town hall on the Arctic Rec Center. He framed individual assembly members' scattered discussions about its potential conversion as the Anchorage Assembly's plan, and said the Assembly was actively lobbying state lawmakers to fund it. Tuesday, he chided the Assembly for failing to engage with the public sooner.
I found this odd, irresponsible, bad public process.
Assembly members say that was misleading and premature. No one has formally proposed the municipality buy and convert the rec center into a shelter. Some Assembly members did acknowledge they raised it as a potential project when they met with state lawmakers recently. At the Assembly meeting, Bronson also revived talk about building a navigation center and shelter at Tudor and Elmore. He said he is committed to finding a path forward on it.
This project is not abandoned. It has gone through a robust public process. This is a project waiting for the Assembly and me to finish what we started.
A contractor began work on that project last year, but stopped after the administration admitted it overstepped its authority to pay for it without Assembly approval. The Assembly and mayor are still trying to resolve the unpaid contractor's demands. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Mayor Bronson is holding a town hall meeting Friday evening about the Arctic Recreation Center. It's scheduled for 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Rec Center, located at 4855 Arctic Boulevard. On Wednesday, the Anchorage Assembly authorized legal action against Mayor Dave Bronson's administration to block payment to a construction contractor. The Assembly authorized it in a 9-2 vote, though it doesn't guarantee a court battle. The mayor and Assembly leaders say they hope they can sort out their differences with each other, then settle up with Roger Hickle Contracting. The main issue for the Assembly is that the administration intends to pay the contractor tomorrow without Assembly approval, which was what led to the contractor not getting paid in the first place. The administration said it mistakenly overstepped its powers by authorizing the contractor's work without Assembly approval last year. In some communications, the administration has asserted it can lawfully make the payment without Assembly approval. Assembly Vice Chair Chris Constant says they are sympathetic to the contractor and do want to make the parties whole, but they won't ignore their due diligence responsibilities to taxpayers.
We're not going to be browbeaten to continue violating the law. We're not going to do it. There is no power that the mayor legally has to spend money from the Treasury without authorization of this body.
Mayor Bronson says he's agnostic about how to actually resolve the bill. He says he just wants the lawyers for the Assembly and his administration to figure it out.
I worry about the credibility of the city, of the municipality, in the sense that when we are legally obligated to pay something, the message that it sends to the, especially the contracting public, that, oh, there's always the risk when you do business with the municipality, you have to take them to court to get paid.
The Assembly specifically wants a meeting with the mayor and legal team to be briefed on the proposed settlement and legal analysis. The administration has said it has a deadline on Friday to pay the contractor. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Homer Police Department is engaging in discussions with parents about online privacy and security.
Good kids make poor decisions. They do stupid things. And that doesn't mean they're a bad kid. This stuff happens to good kids and good families.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Parents go to great lengths to protect their little ones. When it comes to protection from childhood diseases, go with the safest, most effective choice. Start strong by getting all recommended vaccines for your baby by age 2. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. That's vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
The Alaska-based 11th Airborne Division will host its first large-scale training exercise next week on ranges around Fort Wainwright and Eielson Air Force Base. That means more than 500 Army vehicles that'll take part in the exercise will be traveling on the Parks Highway and the northernmost stretch of the Richardson Highway. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The exercise is called the Joint Pacific Multinational Readiness Center Alaska, and this year it'll be hosted by the 11th Airborne Division, not U.S. Army Alaska. That's because the Army reactivated the 11th Airborne last summer to assume command of Alaska's Army assets and deactivated USARAC. And the change was part of the Army's new Arctic strategy.
It's an ongoing effort to kind of regain the muscle memory that we had in years previous for dealing in Arctic temperatures and conditions and terrain.
11th Airborne spokesperson John Pinnell says for years, Alaska-based soldiers frequently were deployed to faraway conflict zones in hot, arid places like Afghanistan and Iraq. And he says that hindered the soldiers' familiarity with how to operate in the Arctic.
We lost a lot of that knowledge, a lot of that ability during the 20 years where we were focused primarily on rotating into the global war on terrorism.
Another change in this year's exercise is the venue.
The primary training area is going to be the Yukon training area, closer to Eielson Air Force Base, as opposed to the Donnelly training area down near Fort Greely.
Pinnell says Army officials decided to move the exercise to the Yukon training area to determine, among other things, whether it can accommodate large numbers of troops and equipment. Some 8,000 soldiers and more than 500 military vehicles will take part in the exercise.
In the past, we haven't used it for this kind of a large-scale exercise, so we're wanting to put that area through its paces as well as our forces.
Pinnell says participants in this year's exercise will include special operations personnel, as well as trainers from the Joint Readiness Training Center in Louisiana, and observers and soldiers with allied nations from Canada, Europe, and Japan. Staging the exercises in the Yukon training area will mean the soldiers and equipment from Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson mainly will be traveling to and from Fort Wainwright over the Parks Highway and the northernmost 30 miles or so of the Richardson Highway.
That doesn't mean that you might not see a military vehicle or two over on the Rich, but the Parks is our primary means of getting there.
Convoys from J-Bear started rolling toward Fort Wainwright over the Parks Highway on Wednesday, and they'll move from Wainwright to the Yukon training area near Eielson beginning next Wednesday over the Richardson Highway. They begin returning to J-Bear the next week on April 6th. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
This week, the Alaska Board of Game deliberated dozens of proposals that would restrict trapping on the Kenai Peninsula, part of its week-long meeting in Soldotna on regulations for South Central Alaska. One proposal the board approved Tuesday will limit trapping and hunting on wildlife crossings along a Central Peninsula highway project. KDLL's Riley Board has this story on the board's deliberation and decision.
The Cooper Landing Bypass will divert traffic from part of the Sterling Highway around the community of Cooper Landing through the wildlife-heavy Juneau Creek area north of the community. Construction on the bypass is in progress, and current plans for the project include several wildlife underpasses, as well as the first-ever Alaska Highway Wildlife Overpass, a bridge over the bypass that would allow wildlife like moose and bears to safely cross. The proposal, submitted by the Anchorage-based Alaska Wildlife Alliance, asked that hunting and trapping would be prohibited on and within a quarter mile of the over and under passes. In the proposal, the alliance argues that allowing hunting in these areas negates the $10.5 million investment the Department of Transportation is making in the structures, and that, quote, these underpasses and this bypass, meant to benefit wildlife, could turn into a population sink.
To me, this is pretty easy. We're creating a choke point for animals, which can cause a domino effect, if you will.
Stosh Hoffman is a member of the board from Bethel.
This whole concept makes complete sense to me, that we have to have some type of buffer zone around these areas where we're causing animals to go through.
During deliberations, the board acknowledged that wildlife under and overpasses are relatively new to Alaska. And Department of Fish and Game staff explained that there are no precedents for hunting or trapping limits around the structures. But one board member said there is precedent in fish weirs, another man-made structure that funnels animals into a choke point. Fishing is not allowed within 300 feet of weirs in Alaska. The board added language to the proposal that restricts hunters from shooting into the quarter-mile buffer from right outside. Then the board voted on the amended proposal, which passed unanimously. Nicole Schmidt is the director of the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. She was excited about the board's decision and the precedent it sets.
Wildlife migration is really important to the health of the wildlife, and so creating this setback for hunting and trapping protects those corridors that we've spent millions of dollars to establish. And so we were just really excited to see this codified.
The proposal was the first in a long list of submissions related to hunting and trapping on the Kenai Peninsula, including a slew of proposals that would add trapping setbacks along trails and campgrounds in Homer and Cooper Landing. The board shot down most of those proposals. In Soldotna, I'm Riley Board.
Governor Mike Dunleavy has nominated an executive at Coastal Villages Region Fund as his top choice to serve on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. Ruichi Sakata is the chief operating officer at Coastal Villages. That's one of six Western Alaska nonprofits that own catch shares in the Bering Sea fisheries through the Community Development Quota Program. Sakata's employer also owns a Bering Sea factory trawler. The nomination, if approved by the U.S. Secretary of Commerce, would continue the tradition of seating members on the North Pacific Council with roots in the pollock industry. The selection disappointed subsistence advocates and small boat fishermen who are calling for more diversity on the council. Dunleavy, in his nomination letter, said the state makes an effort to seek out women, people of color, and people from historically underrepresented communities. He said Sakata is known in sport fishing circles in South Central Alaska for helping to popularize kayak angling, fishing for halibut and salmon from a kayak. The Magnuson-Stevens Act requires the governor to nominate a preferred candidate as well as two alternate nominees. Dunleavy proposed two directors from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game as alternates.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
The Homer Police Department is hosting a series of presentations for parents this spring to raise awareness about youth safety and etiquette online, from preventing sexual exploitation to stalking and cyberbullying. KBBI's Corinne Smith reports, and a quick warning here, this story contains references to sexual abuse and suicide and may not be suitable for all listeners.
Homer Police Lieutenant Ryan Browning is on a mission to get parents talking with their kids about online safety.
This cannot be a conversation where we give our kid a cell phone or a tablet or device and we say, hey, good luck to you, don't be an idiot, right? This is stuff that we've got to talk about continuously, openly, and honestly with them.
A recent event at the Homer Public Library drew a few dozen parents for Browning's two-hour presentation called Parenting in the Digital Age. He's bringing the discussion to schools and community centers to help parents understand and talk about social media, online privacy and etiquette, signs of abuse or exploitation, and to share resources.
Good kids make poor decisions. They do stupid things, and that doesn't mean they're a bad kid. This stuff happens to good kids and good families.
Browning says the campaign was prompted by recent disturbing cases on the Kenai Peninsula. Earlier this year, a Homer man was arrested for sexual abuse and online enticement for exchanging sexually explicit photos with several teenage girls. Soon after, Browning was called to respond to a youth suicide attempt.
We had a young lady in town who basically had sent her final text and didn't want to live anymore. And in responding to that call and dealing with her and finding out kind of some of the stuff that got her to that point, was a catalyst for me that I knew that somebody needs to start somewhere having this conversation and talking to parents.
At the library, Browning flashes headlines of cases of child abuse, child pornography, and exploitation around the Kenai Peninsula over the last decade. He says last year in Homer alone, the police department received reports of 18 sexual assaults and 4 stalking cases.
Right now we have 33 kids who are victims of sexual assault. 33 active cases. That is more than you that are in this room right now. Tell me this doesn't happen in Homer. It does.
Browning emphasized Alaska is in a statewide sexual assault and exploitation crisis, and parents must step up to intervene and protect children. That means parents confronting what can be their worst fears of talking openly about stranger danger or sex and relationships with their kids.
Like, these are not easy topics to talk about, especially with your kid, but we've got to do it.
He says he's seen photos and messages be used as blackmail and extortion, and so discussing online privacy and reputation is important.
If we can teach our kids and just drill in their little melons that everything is public and permanent, everything they do online, everything they do on social media, everything they do on their cell phones, somebody might see at some point.
He cited data on the addictive nature of social media algorithms and said adolescents are particularly vulnerable to be influenced by what they're seeing and experience impacts to their mental health.
There's people that make millions of dollars that share this little tiny bit of their perfect life. And that's what our kids think is real.
Browning cited data showing rising rates of hopelessness, depression, and suicide among teens, which have increased during the COVID pandemic. Also rates of sexual violence, abuse, and cyberbullying. He said parents should be aware of signs, notice any withdrawal, sleeplessness, or anxiety, and especially notice if their kids are upset if their phone is taken away. For perpetrators of online extortion, bullying, or abuse, Browning says it's about power and targeting the young and vulnerable.
100%. It's, I'm going to get you to do this, or I am going to send your friends in this, or you're going to go give me money, and or I'm going to do this. And it's 100% about, yeah, just using somebody for means to an end.
Homer parents Joe and Summer, in attendance at the Homer Library event, said their 2 kids are still young, but they found the event informative and recommend it for parents.
I grew up in Homer. Alaska's always had a problem with this kind of stuff before it went online, and now it's just that much worse now that there's the online component. So, yeah, anyone with kids could benefit from it, for sure.
Browning encourages parents to look at online safety resources like NetSmarts and the Internet Watch Foundation, and to report abusive behavior to social media companies. Browning is planning to take the presentation to schools and communities around the state, the next stops in Soldotna, Kenai, and Sitka. In Homer, I'm Corinne Smith.
For the first time in 5 years, Pier 1 Theater, Homer High School's choral program, and a community orchestra are coming together to put on Newsies, the musical, this weekend. KBBI's Hope McKinney attended rehearsal Tuesday evening and has this story.
Teenagers dance around the Mariner stage at Homer High, dressed in short trousers, tweed caps, and suspenders. A song from the Disney musical resounds from the pit, where a community orchestra with violins, an oboe, and a trumpet sit beneath the stage.
You're looking at about 60 students on stage, plus another 10 in the back.
That's Kyle Schneider, director of choral activities at Homer High School. And just a heads up, he's also on KBBI's board of directors. The high school doesn't have a theater program, so productions like this weekend's are put on through the school's choral program, meaning kids of all grades and interests can sign up.
It really does create a very interesting community within choir, because not only do we have the students who are very much in choir because they love to sing, but we also have the students who are in choir because they want to act and they want to dance, or they want to help with sets, or they want to help with theater tech. So it creates a very cool community.
Every year, Schneider sits down with a short list of about 10 shows and narrows it down based on who's joined the choir. The last time the school collaborated with Pier 1 and the orchestra on a show was in 2018 for Leonard Bernstein's West Side Story. This year, they're doing Newsies, a musical about a group of young newspaper salesmen in 1890s New York City who go on strike when their publisher makes it harder for them to make a buck. It's inspired by the real-life Newsboys strike of 1899, which stopped circulation of two papers for 2 weeks. Historically, Newsboys would buy papers from the publisher at 50 cents per hundred and sell them at 1 cent each for a profit of half a cent per paper. But several publishers in the late 1890s raised the cost of a Newsboys bundle from 50 cents to 60 cents.
And so that was one of their reasonings for starting the strike process.
Disney released a musical film in 1992 starring Christian Bale and Bill Pullman that was later adapted for the stage. Schneider says it's been a favorite of his for a while.
This is one of the shows that I fell in love with as a young musician, as a young artist, as a young singer.
Schneider says this was not a show he took on lightly, but he says he had a big group of singers and dancers in his classes, which is why he decided on the dance-heavy production.
But it's also because of the story. We talk to our students every single day about using your voice and about advocating for yourselves. And this is just a great storyline about advocating for yourself. And it's been incredible for me as a director and as a teacher and as an adult in their lives to be able to watch them grow through the process.
Newsies will be held at the Mariners Theater on Friday at 7 p.m. and on Saturday at 3 and 7. Tickets are available in advance at the Homer Bookstore. In Homer, I'm Hope McKenney.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Jeremy Shea in Anchorage, Tim Ellis in Delta, Riley Board in Kenai, and Corinne Smith and Hope McKenney in Homer. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us, news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. Ensure the vitality of public radio by including it in your estate planning. Together, we build a sustainable future for quality media. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.